in your hands. So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records, addresses, phone numbers? Well, squeeze on over to freedomslips.com. Yes, that's www.freedomslips.com. Click the banner on the homepage for the EMP proof bullet drive to get the full scoop of everything that we offer. So, folks, keep your data safe for your peace of mind. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us, we're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so obvious. Makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you got it.
Ray, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
It is again time for the New American Dream Radio Show. The American Russian novel, All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Out. We have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, a tortured tundra.
What we must have is a new American dream. We are allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. A new American dream. Out of homes and toasters, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were, the new America, the real hope of the world.
Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar, maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
Try to remember the kind of September when life was slow and oh so mellow. Try to remember the kind of September when grass was green and grain was yellow. Try to remember the kind of September when you were a tender and callow fellow. Try to remember, and if you remember, then follow. Try to remember when life was so tender, when no one wept except the willow. Try to remember when life was so tender, when dreams were kept beside your pillow. Try to remember when life was so tender, when love was an ember about to billow. Try to remember, and if you remember, then follow. Deep in December, it's nice to remember, although you know the snow will follow. Deep in December, it's nice to remember, without a hurt, the heart will hollow. Deep in December, it's nice to remember the fire of September that made you mellow. Deep in December, our hearts should remember and follow. Good night, everyone. I am Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And remember, it's listener-supported radio, so be sure to head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. Look for that donation button and use it. And now I am happy to play a conversation I had earlier with Richard Flamer from Chiapas, Mexico, from the Catholic Worker Farm.
Anthony Bourdain. It's been some time since I explored the violence here in Mexico. Of late, with 9 months of the new president, Andres Manuel López Obrador, or AMLO, some things have gotten better while others are worse. With the new policies of AMLO in fighting crime, mostly violence, extortion, drug dealing, and stealing gasoline from pipelines, results have sometimes been rapid. With the gas line thefts, a series of events promptly changed the landscape. In a small town in northern Mexico, a video surfaced of people from a neighboring town trying to collect gasoline from a 20-foot plume coming from a fractured, pressurized pipeline. The police and firemen called to the scene tried with little success to move the people away from the plume. The resulting explosion killed over 70 people. Within 2 weeks, a plan developed to shut down all the pipelines and replace the delivery systems with tanker trucks. A fleet of just over 200 tankers began transporting the fuel direct from the refineries in convoys, escorted by federal police and the newly formed National Guard. In subsequent weeks, over 40 valves and ruptures were discovered, shut down by the National Guard. In that short period, four executives of the nationalized oil company, Pemex, were charged with fraud and conspiracy working with the bigger drug cartels. The refineries were inspected and rebuilding commenced. National Guard and federal police were dispatched to the oil islands in the Caribbean to guard the wholesale robbery of petroleum. Charges were filed naming four U.S. oil companies for stealing entire tanker ships with petroleum and selling the crude in Houston. The CEO of Pemex has been arrested along with his wife and mother for fraud and money laundering as well. with Trump threatening to impose tariffs on Mexican products unless the flow of migrants to the U.S. was slowed. AMLO, the president of Mexico, used the National Guard, newly formed, composed of military and naval police, mixed with federal police, immigration agents, and state police to control the influx of migrants. By using the various forces together, the bribery was halted. What few were talking about in the U.S., the Trump policies of cutting off asylum for Haitians, Cubans, and Africans. Some 2,000 Africans, at least 6,000 Cubans, and 4,000 Haitians are now waiting at the frontier with the U.S. near Tijuana, while others are making their way north from Ecuador, Colombia, Venezuela, and other South American countries. As for the Central American migrants, most are escaping the narco state of Honduras, which the U.S. helped create, with the current president being investigated in the U.S. for his involvement in drug trade. The violence of El Salvador, Guatemala, the U.S. helped create them as well. The violence engendered largely from U.S. policies of the 1960s through 2019. Anthony Bourdain, noted chef, commentator, and traveler, recorded the following. Americans love Mexican food. We consume nachos, tacos, burritos, tortas, enchiladas, tamales, and anything resembling Mexican in enormous quantities. We love Mexican beverages, happily knocking back huge amounts of tequila, mezcal, and Mexican beer every year. We love Mexican people. We sure employ all of them. Despite our ridiculously hypocritical attitudes toward immigration, we demand that Mexicans cook a large percentage of the food we eat, grow the ingredients we need to make that food, clean our houses, mow our lawns, wash our dishes, and look after our children. As any chef will tell you, our entire service economy, the restaurant doesn't know it in most American cities, would collapse overnight without Mexican workers. Some, of course, like to claim that Mexicans are stealing American jobs. But in 2 decades as a chef and employer, I never had one American kid walk in my door and apply for a dishwashing job, a porter's position, or even a job as prep cook. Mexicans do much of the work in this country that Americans probably simply won't do. We love Mexican drugs. Maybe not you personally, but we as a nation certainly consume titanic amounts of them and go to extraordinary lengths and expense to acquire them. We love Mexican music, Mexican beaches, Mexican architecture, interior design, Mexican films. So why don't we love Mexico? We throw up our hands and shrug at what happens and what is happening just across the border. Maybe we're embarrassed. Mexico, after all, has always been there for us to service our darkest needs and desires. Whether it's dress up like fools and get passed out drunk and sunburned on spring break in Cancun, throw pesos at strippers in Tijuana, or get toasted on Mexican drugs, we are seldom on our best behavior in Mexico. They have seen many of us at our worst. They know our darkest desires. In the service of our appetites, we spend billions and billions of dollars each year on Mexican drugs, while at the same time spending billions and billions more trying to prevent those drugs from reaching us. The effect on our society is everywhere to be seen. Whether it's kids nodding off and overdosing in small town Vermont, gang violence in L.A., burned out neighborhoods in Detroit, it's there to see. What we don't see, however, haven't really noticed and don't seem too much to care about is the 80,000 dead in Mexico just in the past few years. Mostly innocent victims, 80,000 families who've been touched directly by the so-called war on drugs. Mexico, our brother from another mother country, our brother from another mother, a country with whom, like it or not, we are inexorably deeply involved in a close but often uncomfortable embrace. Look at it. It's beautiful. It has some of the most ravishingly beautiful beaches on earth. Mountains, desert, jungle, beautiful colonial architecture, a tragic, elegant, violent, ludicrous, heroic, lamentable, heartbreaking history. Mexican wine country rivals Tuscany for gorgeousness. Its archaeological sites, the remnants of great empires, unrivaled anywhere. As much as we think we know and love it, we have barely scratched the surface of what Mexican food really is. It's not milk and cheese over tortilla chips. It's not simple or easy. It's not simply bro food at halftime. It is, in fact, old, older even than the great cuisines of Europe, and often deeply complex, refined, subtle, and sophisticated. A true mole sauce, for instance, can take days to make. A balance of freshly, always fresh, ingredients, painstakingly prepared by hand. It could be, should be, one of the most exciting cuisines on the planet if we paid attention. The old school cooks of Oaxaca make some of the most difficult and nuanced sauces in gastronomy. Some of the new generation, many of whom have trained in the kitchens of American Europe, have returned home to take Mexican food to new thrilling heights. It's a country I feel particularly attached to and grateful for. In nearly 30 years of cooking professionally, just about every time I walked into a new kitchen, there was a Mexican guy who looked after me, had my back, showed me what was what, and was there. And on the case, when the cooks like me, with backgrounds like mine, ran away to go skiing or surfing or simply flaked. I've been fortunate to track where some of those cooks come from, to go back home with them, to small towns populated mostly by women, where in the evenings, families gather at the town's phone kiosk, waiting for calls from their husbands, sons, and brothers who've left to work in their kitchens in the cities of the north. I've been fortunate enough to see where that affinity for cooking comes from, to experience moms and grandmothers preparing many delicious things with pride and real love, passing that food by hand from their hands to mine. In years of making television in New Mexico, it's one of the places we, as a crew, are happiest when the day's work is over. We'll gather around a street stall and order soft tacos with fresh, bright, delicious salsas, drink cold Mexican beer, sip smoky mezcals, and listen with moist eyes to sentimental songs from street musicians. We will look around and remark for the 100th time, what an extraordinary place this is. The received wisdom is that Mexico will never change. That it is hopelessly corrupt from top to bottom. That it is useless to resist, to care, to hope for a happier future. But there are heroes out there who refuse to go along. People who are standing up against overwhelming odds, demanding accountability, demanding change at great, even horrifying personal cost. My own sense is that AMLO, the new president, is making great inroads into the corruption here in Mexico. Recently, Rosario Robles was arrested. She was the equivalent of the Secretary of State in a scandal which is just now beginning to break. In her case, you're talking about her stealing billions of dollars or pesos. The corruption on the local level continues, but AMLO is continuing every day. He's making himself very transparent. Every morning he has a press conference. And he's done really wonderful things with shifting the balance of the budget to programs for the poor. In many cases, there's shouting and greeting about his how the poor don't actually won't know how to use that money properly and so forth. And yet he's always surprising with what he has to say. Recently there have been auctions of of cars and jewelry taken from drug dealers. But additionally, there were some 160 vehicles which were auctioned off, and originally they were purchased for the Senate, and the the House of Representatives. And he said it was a needless waste that each of them had their own cars. So all those vehicles were auctioned off. More importantly, there was a huge mansion on 23 acres, which sits right in the heart of Mexico City, that belonged to a drug dealer and a Chinese citizen who did money laundering and sold chemicals coming from China to the drug dealers. He was arrested some 4 years ago, I think. And his house, his mansion, went up for auction and was purchased by a sports aficionado day from northern Mexico, who turned around and donated it to Mexico and the sports association to house and train all the Olympic athletes from Mexico.
Wow.
That's the sort of thing that AMLO's producing in his presidency. And, of course, I see nothing of that in the U.S. press. But that's pretty usual. Here, we're getting ready to go back up to the States. And Araceli and I have an appointment with an immigration lawyer for her to pursue a green card for permission to work. So, and I'll be picking up another truck and driving back down to Mexico with tools. So that's what I've been up to. And you?
Well, a lot less than that. I'll tell you. I am now pretty much starving to death after hearing you describe the food there. And
yeah.
And wow, if only other countries, the United States, but also, you know, many others in the world could follow this example and have a leader who's actually trying to make positive changes and help people, and clearly what he's doing is working, in that the other people are following the example, are, you know, changing what they do and doing things like, you know, donating the sports facility or the home. Well, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, really. And I'm delighted to be here while it's all going on. That's not to say that the violence the violence continues, but we're, there's another interesting phenomenon that goes along with all that, and that's the, as the major drug lords were picked up and prosecuted, the gangs, the cartels, have split up into smaller groups, searching for power, and so they're fighting amongst each other. So there's, in one sense, there's more violence, but fewer, you know, a lot more groups, but smaller.
Right.
But I think he's doing a great job along the way. Just in my travels around Mexico, I've discovered that people are refusing to pay bribes, and me included. And so on every level, it's happening.
Yeah.
Which is pretty exciting.
I would say now the bribes are almost they were almost completely accepted and expected just a few years ago, right?
Sure. And but they're really trying to introduce this system to clean it all up. I think Anthony Bourdain said it well, that there are some people who are working very hard to clean it all up. So there is hope.
Well, it is always nice to hear a message of hope, because so often it's the opposite. You know, the horrible things that are going on tend to catch all the headlines, all the publicity, and dominate our very minds and spirit. And when we hear a message of hope like this, it's like a breath of fresh air.
Yes.
Richard, and, thank you. Go ahead.
If you get the chance, say hi to Mike. And I'm always interested in what's going on there. Though I haven't, I must say that I keep up more with Latin American politics and history and current affairs than I do right. The States. But, and the good news is I don't have an internet connection at the house. So I only get to go into
that. I don't know how I would survive that way.
Well, it's interesting that I do get Facebook and I get, and I can telephone from here.
Right.
But my own sense is that I only get 2 gigs a month. And so I space it out pretty carefully.
Yeah. We are so lucky to have Richard Flamer as a monthly guest on our show. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you after the station break.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit partdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugio, who's a co-host for me. And Philip is going to be joining us momentarily. And the first thing we're going to be doing is listening to his column that we recorded earlier in the week. So here we are. Philip Ferrugio with It's the Empire, Stupid.
Okay, September 12th is the day after September 11th. Working stiffs. You don't need a weatherman. Take it from one of Bob Dylan's songs, Subterranean Homesick Blues, this lyric, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows, is fitting for what went down on 9/11/01 in that classroom in Sarasota, Florida. If you recall, Junior Bush was on a scheduled visit to an elementary school in Sarasota, Florida on that morning. When he arrived at the school, before entering Ms. Daniels' classroom, Junior Bush was told that a plane had crashed into one of the Twin Towers. It is said that he exclaimed, "They better check that pilot's license," as he readied to begin his visit. He said that, obviously, tongue-in-cheek. While reading to the children sometime after, Bush's chief of staff, Andrew Card, whispered in his ear that a second plane had crashed and it went into the other tower. Researcher David Ray Griffin in 2004 offered this. On the one hand, the Secret Service, which has responsibility for protecting the president from any possible threat to his life, should have assumed, once it was clear that terrorists were going after high-value targets, that the president might have been one of the targets. As one article put it, Bush's presence made the planned reading event a perceived target because the well-publicized event at the school assured Bush's location that day, and it was no secret. On the other hand, people observed that the Secret Service had not acted accordingly. The day after 9/11, Canada's Globe and Mail newspaper commented, "For some reason, Secret Service agents did not bustle Bush away." The background for this comment was explained by Philip Melanson, the author of a book about the Secret Service. He said, "With an unfolding terrorist attack, the procedure should have been to get the president to the closest secure location as quickly as possible," unquote. Now, that this indeed would have been standard operating procedure, and it's illustrated by the fact that as soon as the second strike on the World Trade Center was seen on television, one agent said to Sarasota County Sheriff Bill Balkwill, quote, "We're out of here. Can you get everybody ready?" unquote. But this agent's decision was obviously overridden by some high Secret Service agent, as Bush was allowed not only to remain in the classroom for 7 or more minutes, but also to remain at the school for another 20 minutes. He was even allowed to deliver a television address to the nation, thereby letting everyone know that he was still at the school. Now, this behavior seemed especially reckless in light of reports issued at that time that as many as 11 planes had been hijacked. The Secret Service should have feared that one of those planes was bearing down on the school in Sarasota. The Secret Service's behavior, however, suggested that it had no fear that the school would be attacked. The Secret Service's failure to hustle Bush away, even stranger in the light of the reports that Vice President Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, and several congressional leaders were quickly taken in Washington to safer locations. Should not protecting President Bush have been an even higher priority? As Susan Taylor Martin of the St. Petersburg Times put it on July 4, 2004, quote, "One of the many unanswered questions about that day is why the Secret Service did not immediately hustle Bush to a secure location, as it apparently did for Vice President Dick Cheney," unquote. Okay, folks, so how many of you seen countless films about the Secret Service reacting when they feel the president is in any way in danger? In the film, In the Line of Fire, when the president is at an event and a balloon pops, they rush him out like gangbusters. On September 11th, as David Ray Griffin explained, the whole world knew that Junior Bush was in Sarasota at that school. Yet, even after a second plane crashed into the tower, they let him sit there for 7 minutes at least, and then for some time after at the school. Translation, those in the know must have felt that the president was as safe as could be that morning. Of course, then, in perhaps a PR move, they rushed him onto his plane and took him for a ride all over the country after they allowed him to be a target at that school. So one needs not to study, as I have done for 16 years or more, all the multitude of inconsistencies and actual facts that those in the 9/11 truth movement have uncovered. Just this one simple little incident must show anyone with even half a brain that something was rotten on that Tuesday morning. There was no way that the highly professional Secret Service would allow what transpired to occur, ever. Thank you. Oh, boy.
Yeah, quite a thoughtful piece there, Phil.
Thank you. Chucky, where were you?
One thing that occurs to me, there's another potential explanation that whoever was running the Secret Service thought that they'd be better off with one less Junior Bush and one Cheney in charge.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's something to think about, right? Well, tell me where you were on the morning of 9/11 when you first heard.
Well, I was at home, and Lorraine was not at home. But where she was, I guess the TV was on or something. So she heard about this right when it happened. So I get a call when I wasn't really quite yet awake for the day, and it's Lorraine, and I go, "What are you doing calling?" And she says, "Turn on the TV right now." And that's how I found out.
Yeah, I was I was working at home, and I was on the phone calling up one of my customers. And then a friend of mine around the corner had called my house on a different line, told me to turn on the TV, and I couldn't believe it. You know, it was just so surreal, you know. And, of course, afterwards, you know, we all didn't know what to think. You know, I mean, they tell you something and you want to believe it. So we, for a couple of days, you believe it. And then, thank goodness, on the alternative media, things started coming out. Not for Canadian broadcasting had a lot. Anyway, things started coming out that were very strange. And for instance, the Bin Laden family, all the members of the extended Bin Laden family that were in the United States that day, I think they were over in Louisville or something, or they were allowed to leave the country when there was a lockdown, if you remember, right? There was a lockdown, and no plane could come leave the country. No plane.
Supposedly.
That was it. It was a lockdown. Yeah. And yet they were allowed to leave, you know, on a special plane. And so that was kind of strange. And, you know, little by little, thank goodness, over time, things start to come out, information, and about Bin Laden and about what they called Al-Qaeda and the Pakistani Secret Service and the ISI, I think they call the ISI. And then you find out that a head of the Pakistani ISI was in Washington that day. And then you find out that Bush Sr., his father, was meeting with one of the Bin Ladens through the Bush Sr.'s representation of the Carlyle Group, the private your private equity company, your private holding company.
Yeah.
And he was with him in the U.S. that day. It was just a very strange, you know, set of events and circumstances afterwards that the news came out. And then you heard about the famous puts that were bought on certain airline stocks prior to 9/11. A put is a bet that the stock will go down in a certain period of time. That's what's called a put. And people, and there was a crazy, crazy, uneven amount of puts being purchased prior to 9/11. So these things all, they didn't come out within a day or two, but over the period of weeks and months, these things started coming out. And that's when I really started to question the whole thing, you know. Yeah. And thank goodness David Ray Griffin.
I started to question it a bit sooner, like maybe around 10 or 11 on the day it happened.
Really? How come you felt that way?
Things just looked really fishy to me. At first, you know, my immediate reaction was that we were under attack by some foreign country. World War III was about to happen. I should be expecting, an atomic bomb to hit somewhere and wipe out all of South Florida any time now. But that didn't happen. And I thought, well, I wonder why. And then I started looking more into it, and things just didn't look right. When the towers came down, the announcer on the air says, "My God, this looks like a controlled demolition."
Well,
oh, wait a minute! How that has been totally excised from all of the transcripts and so forth.
How about this? How about the fact that, of course, I mean, you didn't know this prior, but after 9/11, it came out. I don't know how soon after, weeks, days, but then they start talking about the August 6th. Daily bulletin that the CIA would give the president every day. And on the August 6th bulletin, they said that we should beware of using planes, hijacked planes, as missiles.
Huh.
Okay? August 6th, that was given to Bush from Tenet. And that came out, obviously, afterwards. And then you really start thinking. And then you find out that Ashcroft stopped flying on commercial planes over the summer.
Yeah.
No, he did. And then Willie Brown, who I think he was the mayor of San Francisco, he said that he was told not to fly, on commercial planes over the summer. You know, when you hear that information, I mean, when you hear Ashcroft is no longer flying on commercial flights,
what the hell is going on here? Yeah. The clincher for me was when I came across the Project for a New American Century and read on their website how they could really use a new Pearl Harbor that they would have excuses to do all the things that they wanted to do.
I'll tell you what got me, and again, you know, what I'm about to tell you, I didn't even know until a couple of years later, because, you know, I don't know, we just didn't get all this information through the alternative media, but the thing that got me, that, you know, really, really made me, take cover, was when I found out that on September 11th, 2001, NORAD and the FAA were conducting war games. It was called Operation Vigilant Guardian. That's what the term was, and they were doing war games involving fake hijacked planes. Right. Now, think about that. The morning of September. Yeah. Now, this wasn't announced in advance. You know, no one knows about this in the public. Uh-huh. You know, because they don't want to tell the public in advance. We're gonna do.
Right.
But it was planned that they were gonna have that Operation Vigilant Guardian on September 11th. I mean, come on, is that a coincidence? That on that morning, when the planes are hijacked, the real planes, you have tapes, recordings, audio of air traffic controllers saying to each other, there's one over here. Is that a real one or is it a fake one? That's what they were saying to each other. Is that this one over here now? Is that a real one or a fake one? Uh-huh. You know, so, I mean, that alone, there's 1,000 different things that 9/11 truth movement and people like David Ray Griffin have come up with, you know, facts over the years. But that one thing, and the thing with Bush Jr., that's why I wrote the piece, because that's a very simple, you don't even need to know anything else. You know, the President of the United States is on a scheduled visit, publicized visit, to a school. On the morning of September 11th, planes go into the Twin Towers, which means they had to be planning involved, right? Two planes. Mm-hmm. And they let him stay in the classroom, you know, even for 5 minutes, for 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Come on.
It's crazy.
In a real world, when that second plane went into you could say the first plane even, okay. But, he made a joke saying, they might check his license. But when they get the news that the second plane went into the Twin Tower, they got to rush, grab this, and get him out of there. And they didn't do it.
He'd be in a bunker or he'd be in the air somewhere. And
That's where they said Cheney was.
Yeah.
So, you know, something's not kosher. And then you hear that the planes were hijacked in Boston, from Boston, they were hijacked. The planes leaving Boston.
Right.
Why in hell did, when the planes were approaching New York, when they were in the airspace getting, you know, in New York now, they weren't in Massachusetts, and the planes were not responding, et cetera, et cetera. So they call out the jets. They're supposed to call out the jets to go up, to intercept. Why do they call the jets from Otis Air Force Base in Massachusetts, when there's in Jersey, there's an Air Force base that has the planes, you know, ready to go up. Jersey to Manhattan is like when an Air Force jet is probably what, 5 minutes. Why?
Right.
Why do they call the planes from Otis? Well, you figure it out, because it takes longer for the planes from Otis to get to New York City. You know, I mean, but again, we didn't know at the time. But as time went on, more and more people got very suspicious. And then they make sure they take all the debris, put it on boats, and ship it out of the country.
Yeah, right.
Which is,
what's going on there?
That's a crime scene.
I guess that way nobody can find out, right?
But that's a crime scene, Chuck.
Exactly.
You're not supposed to expose it. You're not supposed to contaminate a crime scene.
Right.
Right.
Oh, but it's national security,
And then there's the famous Building 7, which most of the 9/11 people are into.
Right?
Lawrence Silverstein, he purchased the whole complex from the Port Authority, and he had it insured for billions of dollars. He had insurance policy. Okay. Not very close to 9/11. He would take out this policy. Like, you didn't take it out a year and a half earlier.
Yeah, right.
And so after the whole thing is, you know, with the two towers, the planes, and but Building 7 is on fire now. The planes didn't go into Building 7. And you hear Silverstein himself, it's on tape, on the phone, whatever it was, saying,
He says, pull it.
He said, pull it. So later on, he said,
No, I meant to have everybody pull them out of the building. Oh,
yeah, sure.
Is that how you say it? You say pull, you know, you say pull them out or pull them out. You don't say pull it. Pull it means pull it down. I mean, come on, it's so obvious. It's so obvious. The whole thing smells rotten, but then, right?
But then we have the crazy theories. You know, holograms.
I know.
It really almost makes me wonder if those ideas are not encouraged in order to muddy the waters and keep us from discovering the real truth.
Well, all I can tell you is this. Whoever was really behind the whole 9/11 thing, you know, and not Osama bin Laden, whoever was really behind it, or whoever was aware of it in advance and profited from it, they are never going to feel intimidated by the people who have these cockamamie theories about holograms, that there were no planes,
exactly,
there were holograms, because they are doing what you said. They are giving out the disinformation that the real culprits want. They want everything to be all muddied. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
sad, right?
It is. It's very sad. It's sad and it's frightening. And
frightening. And you know what, Chuck? The real scary thing is what's happening now with this administration. And the temperature of this country right now, with so many people coming out of the woodwork, war hawks, go after Iran. But first it was Syria, now they want to go after Iran. I mean, it's really scary, because I hate to say it, but a large segment of the American population falls for all this crap. They just fall for it. They believe, like they did after September 11th, when he tells people to go shopping. Can you imagine? Mm. He told people to go shopping.
Mm.
I mean, you know, it's sad, Chuck. It really is sad. And it's been 18 years, and just like with the Kennedy assassination, all those years went by, and all the facts started coming out, and yet, to this day, the government of the United States hasn't done a damn thing about what really happened on November 22nd, 63, and they're not doing a damn thing about what happened on September 11th. And the invasion of Iraq, and you had this hope and change charlatan become president, and what does he say? He says, we have to move forward, when people wanted to investigate the whole run-up to the Iraq invasion and you know, go after the people that you know, did the dirty deed to lie to us and to have that phony war. And he says, it's time to move past that. I mean, you know, this is the way it is.
Yeah.
This is the way history is. History is written by the victors.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they are the victors right now, Chuck. So,
yeah.
You know.
We have a long history of essentially false flag operations that kicked off wars, and we could probably spend a whole show on that, but we're just about out of time in this segment. I really thank you, Philip Perugia, for joining me, co-hosting this segment where we really, got some ideas out there about what happened on 9/11. And
thank you, Chuck.
I always appreciate having you with me on the show, Phil. And talk to you next time.
Thank you, Chuck. Take care.
All right.
listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exo Politics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things, and I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We'll be right back.
Our next guest of the evening will be Thomas Wertmann. Thomas joins us each month from Ohio. He is the chair of the of MUFON, UFO Network in Ohio. And I'm about to add him to the show right now. All right, here we go. Thomas always has some interesting things to tell us about the UFO situation all over the country and especially in Ohio. Hello, Thomas. It's Chuck Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Great. By the way, appreciate the call earlier there, too, on there, Chuck. Tonight, you know, one of the big things that's still going on in this UFO community is this Storm Area 1 event that was slated to go September 20th, which is next week. And just to let you know, Chuck, I turned 65 on that day, and I am not going there because, number one, I want to turn 66.
I hear you.
I don't want to get involved with potential military things coming in, you know, and
yeah, right?
Kind of ending my life prematurely, you know. And just to let you know, I have not been in training because they claim that they're going to run across the desert and storm Area 51 and find out aliens are there. Well, one look at me, Chuck, and you'd say, he's not in training, that's for sure.
Well, yeah.
The only training he's doing looks like 6 ounce curls or 12 ounce curls. That's about it, you know? But anyway, this thing that this young man started, his name in this case is Matty Roberts. He posted a thing on Facebook stating that, hey, I got this great idea. Let's storm Area 51 in this real weird running style that's just kind of like an internet thing. Lower your head down, run ahead, and we can outrun bullets and find out whether there's actually aliens at Area 51. And the whole thing was done as a joke. And he said, how many people want to go? And initially it started out with, 160,000 people. Next thing you know, you had people claiming, again, this is claiming in quotation marks, 2 million people are going to show up out in the desert for this event.
Whoa.
Well, you could just see this disaster potentially coming down. And I thought, you know, why didn't they do something else like, okay, let's have a concert or something like that, some get-together thing, rather than something that's going to potentially be a disaster, because anybody trying to get in Area 51, it's not going to go good. They've got electronic security all over the desert. It's a military base. You have Las Vegas Air Force Base, Nellis Air Force Base, which is not that far away. And chances of somebody getting in is going to be slim to none. So why not turn it into an event? Well, somebody did. As a matter of fact, this gentleman, Matty Roberts, got this idea, said, hey, let's have an alien stock. Let's kind of do like a Woodstock thing in the desert at Area 51. Well, I don't think he really thought about that very well either, because you're 90 miles outside of Vegas, like 20-some miles from the closest small town. The only thing close to Area 51 is this little place called the Little Alien, which is a restaurant, basically gift shop, in the middle of the desert. There's no gas stations. Cell phone communication is minimal. And they thought, well, let's have this whole event. Well, the communities kind of followed on his idea and said, hey, let's see if it's possible. Two or three communities in the region said, hey, let's try it. So they voted on, and they got approved to hold like concerts there over the weekend of this Area 51 event. Well, today it comes out that this gentleman, Matty Roberts, says, I don't think they're really thinking this thing out very well, and I want to bail on. Well, after he got this whole ball rolling, now he's bailing out, which I think he should have anyway earlier. Now you've had these people in the desert taking dozers out, dozing areas out for campgrounds, preparing areas to set up stages for concerts, to bring all these young people in. And they were expecting 10,000 people maybe to show up in the desert with no porta pots or anything else. So yeah. This was just a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, Thomas, in that same general area, they have a big thing every year called Burning Man.
Yeah.
Which used to be really cool, but in recent years has tended towards disasters as it's become better and better known. More people have shown up and more, shall we say, crazy people have shown up.
Oh, exactly. And you know by that type of an event what type this could turn into.
Exactly.
So, and you could have people going out in the desert not realizing it gets freezing out there. They run out of gas. They've got no food, anything else. You've got a complete disaster. And then next thing you know, they're going to be suing the communities and stuff for this stuff. And all it took was somebody on Facebook to come to this crazy idea that says, hey, let's storm Area 51.
Hmm.
Well, now they've decided to move it into Las Vegas.
Ah.
So they've got a center in Las Vegas that says, hey, yeah, we're going to have it here instead. So there's an event center in Las Vegas that they're going to be going in on the 19th. I guess they said admission is free to get in. They're going to have some bands there and stuff playing. So at least they're now in civilization, I guess you could say, which is a much better idea. But I can still see people showing up in the desert for this thing just as a joke.
No doubt. Yeah.
And as a follow-up story for that, just the other day, a couple guys from the Netherlands got busted for trying to get into Area 51.
Huh.
And they said they got the whole idea from this event. And these two guys, and I'm looking at their names, I'm like, are these names? Thijs Granzer and Govert Sweep. And I thought,
seriously?
I'm like, are these typos or what? But they were. It says they're taken into custody by authorities because they were driving around and they were actually 3 miles into the restricted area when they got caught. And where they kind of screwed up at is when they got arrested. They said, oh, yeah, we can speak English and we fully understand the sign. The sign that said, don't go past this point. The sign that said, no photography.
Yeah, right.
And when they searched their cars, they found cameras, cell phones, laptops, and even a drone that had footage from the area as far in as they got. So needless to say, their next interview, by the way, was in a jailhouse.
What a surprise. Yeah.
Exactly. You know. So their siege didn't kind of quite go over so well. But, I mean, here they made national news over in the Netherlands, and they made a big joke out of it over there saying that, oh, wow, now you've got these kids from the Netherlands riding away in an American cell trying to get an Area 51.
Wow.
Well, that was kind of a follow-up in that whole thing. Something else I found, though, a little more serious side, is there was a Gallup poll run recently. And sometimes I like to look at the polls just for curiosity, see what type of numbers they're saying about belief in UFOs and stuff like that. And they're saying right now, according to Gallup polls, about 68% of people believe that the government is withholding information on UFOs.
Hmm.
Now, that number hasn't changed much. In 1996, about 71% of people said the same thing. And it's really kind of similar across all demographics on there. Now, when they break it down, though, that doesn't necessarily mean that of the 68% of people, everybody believes that they're coming from an alien world.
Right.
It says that really about 33% of those percentage of adults believe that the sightings over the years are really alien spacecraft, only about 33%. Now, the majority of those say that these UFO sightings can be really explained by human activity or really natural phenomena, while there's just a small percent that, you know, isn't accountable for.
Right.
And they said that 16% of Americans say they have personally witnessed something on themselves. Now, I can fall in that category myself. I've had multiple sightings over the years. And a couple of them were just incredible. You can't tell me there were any aircraft that we have. Now, looking at some other numbers they've got that said, even though Americans are skeptical, the majority believe that those who spot UFOs are seeing something real. Hmm. Now, and that real, that it could be an aircraft that's just not identified. It could be a drone of some sort. And I think we're going to see those numbers go up with no more use of drones in the future.
Yeah.
It's going to be much more difficult to track those. And they say that about 49% of people think that there is life somewhere else in the universe. And that life is maybe something like ours. Now, 75% say they believe that there's some form of life, period, on other planets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so those numbers are kind of high in themselves.
I have to wonder, Thomas, if indeed the number of people believing that will go up with the increased use of drones, or if the numbers will actually go down because more people will think, oh, it's just a drone.
Yeah, it could go either way. You're right. It could. I mean, maybe I'm just leaning more towards the type that I think more people report them as a UFO and stay with the fact that, hey, it's something unknown. It's not a drone, because maybe that's just what they want to believe. But we'll just have to, you know, kind of wait and see.
Yeah.
Something else even pointed out is 20% of the people, or actually more people in the West, believe in UFOs and alien visitors than people in the East.
Really?
Now, they also say that it's people reporting UFOs is reported by, is accountable for people with lower education, income, and lower social economic values.
Huh.
Now, I represent that comment now, Chuck.
I hear you.
Yeah, I'm in that category. But
yeah, right.
And this, but you know, when I look at the numbers like this, I mean, you have a fair percentage of people saying, "Hey, yeah, we think the government is hiding something out there."
Right.
Now, is it an alien craft? You've got a fair share who think it is. A larger share, period, just think, "Hey, they are holding back on something, whether it be drones, advanced technologies." They're not telling us everything they've got going on.
Right.
And that's what I see bottom line. So that's kind of like something to look at some of the numbers. Now,
yeah,
when we start looking
very interesting.
When we start looking at the planets now, aliens, where would they potentially come from?
Mm.
Something that came out a couple days ago. There was an exoplanet identified back in 2017. Now, one of the universities in England, the University College of London, one of their professors has come out and said, hey, this planet, it has an atmosphere that appears to contain water.
Huh.
So it's saying that they're detecting water in the atmosphere. At least he is, and he's got some other ones on board that agree with him. Mm-hmm. And they say in the next 10 years, they should be able to really pinpoint with, you know, good high level of competence exactly what they're looking at. Because in 10 years, there's this telescope that's going to be operational. It's actually going to be operational in a couple of years called James Webb. Mm-hmm. It's a telescope that's going to be about 600,000 miles from the Earth. Now, picture that. That's almost three times as far as the moon. They're going to position this telescope out from the Earth. So it's not affected by, you know, any of our atmospheres, anything else like any other telescope. It's going to be out there. It's going to have actually screens up to help screen out, almost kind of like if you held up a piece of paper and had a hole in it, you'd be looking through the hole and then blocking everything else out around it. So you're getting a much more pure image. That's what it's going to be doing. And that telescope will probably be one of the ones leading the way in identifying some of this stuff. But they're looking at this planet because it's in an area called the habitable zone. It's something like you could compare like Venus, Earth, and Mars. in relationship to its own star, but it is a lot bigger than the Earth. It's a couple times bigger. Oh. And they're saying that one of the problems is it's going to have a much higher gravitation. And with that higher gravitation on there, that's going to affect the atmosphere. It's going to affect the ground. It could be a very rocky planet. Who knows what the temperatures will be like. They could be between 0 and 40 degrees. Yeah. Or maybe even, you know, way cold. Who knows? But I thought that was interesting that they're coming up now saying, hey, this planet potentially has water. They really believe it does. The team that's also looked into this, there's arguments going on within this team as what really defines habitable. Hmm. Here we look at Earth and we say, okay, we've got to have water, we have to have oxygen, and these are basic needs to support life here.
Right.
But they're arguing over other planets on what's really necessary. If you think about on Earth, we've got creatures existing in temperatures that you think shouldn't, under water at extreme pressures that we couldn't survive.
Right.
So yeah. I think they really need to define, you know, on these other planets what they're really looking at and what would be considered a habitable area.
I guess so before you define what's habitable, you have to define what really is represents life.
That's right. Yeah. You've got to look at all those factors. I mean, here we've got a carbon-based life form. On another world, it may not be a carbon-based life form.
Exactly.
It may be able to survive in different temperatures and everything else. It may not have to have the oxygen levels we do. And what's really amazing about this is this planet, Chuck, is 111 light years away.
Hmm.
And they're detecting that. Now, think about that with our technology.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at these numbers. It says that's roughly 650 million, million miles from Earth.
Huh.
So it's too far to send the probe, but our technologies, our satellites and telescopes up in space are detecting this stuff. Now, this James Webb telescope, have you seen the pictures of this thing?
This thing I think I have, wild. Yeah. Yeah, it is wild, yeah.
They just assembled it the other day, the mechanical parts. They said it's the first time that they've really put the two mechanical parts together.
Uh-huh.
And this is that telescope that's going to be going out in space, well, 750,000 miles, 600,000 miles, whatever it is. And now they're going to start working on the reflectors and all the other stuff, testing out. And in 2021, it's going to be launched. And this is not small. This is a very large device. And
yeah,
this is where, if we've got something that's going to be looking and identifying extraterrestrial life, this is probably the thing that's going to be able to do it with based on our current technologies faster. Because the other telescopes they've had in the past have basically looked at like a little tiny dot in the sky.
Hmm.
And when they've looked for a planet, they've really kind of looked for like light being blocked out in front of a star.
Yeah.
So when they see light blocked out in front of a star, hey, something's moving in front, maybe a planet. And that's what they've worked on identifying.
Hmm.
This one is going to be looking at basically analyzing, like when it passes in front of the star, it's going to be looking at like an atmosphere around this planet and analyzing what that atmosphere looks like. And I just think that's incredible when you're looking at stuff 111 light years away and you potentially determine that.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And they're up right now to like over 3,000 planets in other systems that they've looked at. That they're saying that these are planets.
Hmm.
And that number keeps going up about every day. So these are some of the bigger things. And on a more obscure note, I had somebody come up to me the other day. We had a conference here in Ohio where I'm at. And the individual came up to me and she says, I've got a box of something you may want to take and look at. My husband obtained these documents. And she says he was a contract worker for an aircraft company. And this goes back to Martin Marietta.
Okay.
And he was working outside of Denver. And she says, you may be interested in looking at these. Well, when I open the box up, there are copies of documents of UFO reports from a project called Project Grudge. Now, she mentioned Blue Book, but this is actually a predecessor of Project Blue Book. It was one of the first projects, and it goes back to 1949.
Whoa.
And it's got reports actually even dating from 1947. And when you look at these, some of these are really kind of like very vague, not a whole lot there. And you start going through these and says, okay, this sighting happened on this date, this sighting happened on this date. And these were all typed up, and they were from, it was done by Dr. Alan J. Hynek, who is the contractor consultant for Project Blue Book. He was a professor at Ohio State, and it's got that this was done at the Ohio State Research Foundation in conjunction with the U.S. Air Force. And he has all these reports in numbered sequence. Again, some of them are very vague, but what he says basically in this document, he goes through them and says, okay, this appears to be maybe natural based on meteors, fireballs, etc. A high number of them, I was surprised how many of them, he said, were potentially like weather balloons and different types of balloons. But in the 1960s, I know at least from that time frame, they were launching a number of them, because one of my friends, his dad was stationed at one of the local bases, and he was bringing home balloons from the base that we were inflating and playing with at home. And these were like large inflatable balloons.
Yeah, right.
They were cool as a kid, but
I'm sure
where they were coming from, and it was commonplace. Huh. Well, he said that, you know, a fair percentage of these would probably go back to balloons, in this case, roughly about 20%. But once you start putting all the ones that you can explain away, like astronomical, let's take those off the table, balloons, rocket flares, let's take those off the table, he really still ended up with about 20% that were unexplained based on what the evidence he had. And he had all these sightings all broken down in detail. And I've just copied now one of the sets of documents, which had about 260 pages of reports back to that 1940 some time frame. And I'm scrolling through them as we're talking here, and they all start in 1947, and that was when Kenneth Arnold had his sighting over Washington, Washington State, of which he said he observed flying saucers, as he termed them, going across. And a lot of these reports all came from that same time frame going forward. And I've got three series of documents, Chuck. This one happens to be about 270 pages. I've got about another 300 to 400 pages to scan yet. And I'm going to take and give these to some of my friends to see if they're aware of these, if they've seen them. Because they break down on some of these reports that, okay, like here's one that was basically defined as a hoax. But they're describing in this case how basically these objects, where they're moving, the speeds, approximate speeds they're moving at. And it was a very, very brief investigation as far as I'm concerned.
Interesting.
But
Thomas, we're about out of time. Are you going to post those online somewhere? Or?
Well, I'm working with a group right now out of Michigan. And our hopes is actually have not just documents like this posted, but tons of documents. Now, see if I can get these posted, because the individual who gave them to me said that these are now yours to do with what you want.
Well, that's great. Yeah. All right. I want to hear more about those next time. But right now,
okay,
we are out of time. I thank you very much. This was a very interesting half hour, and I look forward to talking to you again next month.
Sounds good, Chuck. We'll talk to you then.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
And it's time for the station break, folks. Thank you.
freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit partdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, welcome back, everyone. And here we go into our final half-hour segment of the New American Dream Radio Show. Let me remind you that we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and it's listener-supported network. They do deserve your support. Well, we're going to start off this segment with our final guest of the evening. I spoke earlier with Frank Cordero. Frank runs the Des Moines Catholic Worker. And here is the conversation that we had earlier today.
Oh, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank.
It's Thursday again. Is this true?
Can you believe it? It's Thursday again.
I was anticipating this. I'm thinking, what will I talk about? And then as the day went on and I got caught up in my world, I forgot entirely about it. And here you are. I was just, working a little bit on the first floor where I served a great meal. You know, I had a lot of food, two hot dishes of beef and a large tuna salad, knocked it out of the park. So I felt good about feeding our folks. You know, this mantra that I do, if you listen to our shows, we talk a lot about the weather, and we also talk a lot about what I do and what I'm cooking. It's a, I think that's, I'm all right with that. I'll stand by that. These are words from a kitchen, and a guy who's serving the poor. The best I, that's my proactive, productive work for what it's worth. And I continue struggling with the phenomena of our drone command center and not getting any much of a buzz on it. Last week, I read the press release about the particulars we found about how we how it's recorded in this journal of these really war crimes. I mean, where they say that they spent 7,000 hours in 2018 looking for targets, found the targets 350 plus times. That's at least, you know, once a month, because they did it. They did a kill 15 times, once a month, more than once a month. So it's, they do it in broad daylight and trying to get people interested in doing this. So, to that end, Jacob and Rena are going to get in our car. We're going to drive to New Jersey to Princeton, where Princeton is. And on this college campus of Princeton, some progressive peace groups that work with congregations are hosting a retreat or a conference on how to organize around drones. Here to two, they are a group that works just with congregations, and they work for political solutions, advocacy.
Okay.
And the first question is, wow, why are they inviting us? Because we don't do either. We do not work with congregations. We'd like to, and we don't do legislative stuff. However, 2 years ago, this same group had Bishop Pate come and present what the Catholic bishops put out there in 2014, the statement we use. It's a great statement. And they loved him because here's a Catholic bishop that was saying exactly what they needed the parishes they wanted to hear. But they can't get any buzz on their movement. However, they're asking us to come and share about our civil disobedience efforts. I'm looking at they're going to give us 15 minutes to make our case. But what I'm going to say is, listen, you guys, we need each other. What you're missing in your movement is civil disobedience. If you had that as a component of your grassroots, parish by parish, congregation by congregation, then you, if you could wed with solidarity with the already existing faith-based civil disobedience campaigns in New York, Des Moines, Northern California, Nevada, if you can say we are in solidarity with these people and this is part of our program, then we in Des Moines, what we're missing, we do civil disobedience. That's no problem. What we're missing is congregations.
Yeah,
we got nobody to show up with us. And even if you got a great statement like Pates's and U.S. bishops, there's no guarantee they're going to do anything. You got to, the difference between making a movement like ours work or not is civil disobedience. Anybody, most people tend to want to organize around legislative stuff. But if you don't have some component like direct action, you're not going to change anything. That's how it's done in this country. A combination of both. So I'm hoping to pitch that to these academic, these church groups, these folks who liked Bishop Pates, but will hear from us that Bishop Pates, with the best statement in the world, didn't do us any good, no good at all. Because if you're not willing to stand up and say it in your local, where it's happening, no one's going to believe it. Wow. Been chewing on that as a thing to work on. But this weekend, I'm soon to go to Sugar Creek join the Midwest Catholic Workers, our annual gathering. So we can have anywhere between 60 to 200 people there, 12 to 30 communities. So that'll be kind of exciting. We'll meet up with others who are going to go to Georgia in October for the Plowshares trial. Sure.
Oh yeah. Sure.
So I'm thinking about that. So lots of things going on. When I do return from Sugar Creek this weekend, I'm back on the road to Memphis, Tennessee. I'm talking to a Presbyterian theology seminary there about the radical Jesus. So I'm looking really, I've got a pretty busy September into October. So
it sure sounds like it. A lot of traveling.
Yeah, yeah. I hate it, but I, if I don't travel, I don't get to talk. So I got to go. All right. So that's about all I got to say right now. Thanks for talking, Chuck. The show continues at great.
Thank you. I really appreciate you. You're doing these talks every week. It makes me think too. And
thank you.
I'd like to think that there's people out there who maybe will do something different. So.
Oh, don't tease me like that. I've been saying this for years on your show. Nobody answers. I think the post office don't let it happen. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know.
All right. Well, someday I'll meet somebody who might have heard what we have been saying. Terrific. I look forward to that.
Yep.
All right, brother. Bye-bye.
Well, you heard the man. We would really like to hear from you guys out there in Radio Land. It would be really great if you, send us an email. You can get to me. CWG at CWGServices.com. I think I've got comments turned off on the website right now, so that's not an option, but you can look for us on Facebook, send me a message or add something to our page on Facebook, New American Dream Radio Show. Anything, it would really be great to hear from you. I know that on the occasions where I have run into someone, and it's always been completely unexpected, someone who says, "Oh yeah, I know you from that radio show." I go, "What? Really?" And it makes me feel so good that somebody's really out there listening. Now, I know there's a lot of you out there listening. The network tells me it's a pretty big number, 20 or 30,000 or something like that. And, hey, that's wonderful, but I'd sure like to hear from you. All right, that's the end of my rant for that. Let's see what else we got. The other thing about what Frank was saying, talking about congregations and bishops, I wonder sometimes, I'm an Episcopalian, and why is it that it's only the Catholic worker, the Roman Catholic Church, that is involved in fighting war, in feeding? Well, actually, we do some feeding of people, but they're really organized, the Catholic worker. I wish that our Episcopal churches would get involved with that too. I'm on the vestry at St. Mark's. Maybe I can make something happen, but I don't know. Might not be a popular opinion. Anyhow, I think next I'm going to try a little song. So here we go. When I was a young man courting the girls, I played me a waiting game. If a maid refused me with tossing curls, I'd let the old earth take a couple of whirls while I plied her with tears in lieu of pearls. And as time came around,
she came my way. As time came around, she came. Oh, it's a long, long time from May to December. But the days grow short when you reach September. When the autumn weather turns the leaves to flame, one hasn't got time for the waiting game. Oh, the days dwindle down to a precious few. September, November, and these few precious days I'll spend with you. These precious days I'll spend with you. Well, it's been another long week in Bedrock, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. We've received word of a teacher in New York State being fired for doubting publicly the public lie about what happened in all the various places. They say he's mentally ill because he believes in false flags. Well, in the Soviet Union, they often took people away because they said things that didn't fit what everybody else was saying and thinking. Well, it's not that new here, because here in Bedrock, there was also a guy who got sent away for thinking things and writing things. His name was Charlie Johnson. To continue his story, we find Charlie now inside the massive fortress exploring his new living quarters. I leaned into the dark hallway, searching for hope, a glimmer. Nothing. Not even the glow under a door showing a lamp lit somewhere. Began to feel my way around. I had to pee bad. Always had that. When I have to go, I have to go now. Well, June said I should have it checked it out, but one day I wish I had. Well, I'm wishing now. Here I am, fumbling around in the dark. Yeah, big fortress, to having to pee and not being able to find the restroom. Felt my way toward what I thought should be the wall facing the road. I went slowly, hitting end tables, fumbling over hanging pictures. I then headed what I thought to be west, sticking close by, trying to make some time in the open spaces. I got to going too fast and I hit something, maybe with my knee or thigh, but over I went. My big butt became airborne, did a 360, well, maybe a 180. Just watch a hair floated and swayed, and it tumbled me, flipped me over, and in the darkness, I felt finally, totally, thankfully, irretrievably lost. In midair, I was aware of pain and deception, and in the darkness, I felt free for half of a split second, and then I hit. Bottomed out, sunk lower than I'd ever been before, in a soft, leather, padded, foamy, once expensive easy chair. In the delicious darkness, it cushioned and hugged me, took me in. A lesbian nun at the front door of the soup kitchen on a January night. Well, for now, at least I didn't have to pee. Sank way down in that chair. Was so soft, so firm, I felt safe. Put the footrest up, reached to the floor out of habit for my afghan, all folded up and washed by June for me. And it was there. Had a thick weave, the kind with no spaces to let the cold air through, where I like it. I unfolded it, and for some reason it felt yellow and red like mine. I really am crazy. I distinctly remember the thought crossing my mind. Well, like a fisherman casting his net, I tossed it at my legs. Took me a couple tries to get it over my toes. was big enough to tuck around my shoulders under my chin. Well, hey, now I really better not have to go. So I sat there, stared into the dark till it wasn't so dark anymore. I really was not afraid for once. For what reason, I don't know. It had been a long time. At home, after June left, I had the radio or TV on usually most of the time. Began to make out shapes, directions, sounds, smells. I imagine I heard the cry of someone in the night, maybe being tortured by whips or by thoughts of having taken their child to the first day of school and now looking into the child's room and there was no child at all. The screams came again. I could not tell if they were from the houses on the shore or the boat out here on the big lawn sea, this floating prison, insane asylum, lifeboat, timeout room, this resting place for tired minds. Or maybe I heard myself crying. When I wrote all those letters to the editor about how it would cost too much to build another school, how the hippies were ruining America, I never sent me out here. My friend smiled at me when I came to Dan's for coffee. But when I wrote about the war in Iraq and called Bush a stupid idiot, nobody remembered to save my regular chair. When I was in school, Catholic school, St. Mark's, they told us, thou shalt not kill. They told us a lot of things. And when you go out those side doors and take them seriously, they say, wait a minute, be realistic. You ever ask for directions in a small town in Ohio? It's always the same. Guy'll smile, tell you you can't miss it, and if you pass the Dairy Queen, you've gone too far. You're sitting in the mental health institution at night by yourself in the pitch dark with a yellow and red afghan over your knees. You've probably gone too far. You know all those sayings you hear every day? Blah, blah, blah. You're crazy, man. You going there? You're crazy. You doing that? You're crazy. Hey, you know, I like strawberry syrup on a burrito and taco sauce over strawberries. That's crazy. All these things we can't do or we're crazy. I must have done quite a few. Down the hall, maybe around the corner or toward that middle, round, glassy office area, I hear music or talking. I see I'm in a sort of day room area. There are two chairs like mine on this side with a couple of end tables and some plants on the floor. And the restrooms appear to be at the other end of the rectangle. There's a large photo or portrait also at the far end. And that really is a radio I hear. I smell a cigarette. Sounds like a war reporter talking about a battle going on in front of him. There's crackling like gunfire. Well, it could be static. Let my neck muscles relax. Put my head back against the cushion. The footrest gives just a bit more, and I'm an astronaut ready for takeoff to leave the Earth. Get out of Dodge. All I need is for someone to start the countdown. 10, 9, 8. Blast off. That's the news from Bedrock, Ohio, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that just about wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. I thank you so much for being with me tonight. Hope you'll be back next Thursday and every Thursday right here on Revolution Radio at freedomflips.com. And remember, it is a listener-supported radio station. They do deserve your support. So head on over there, freedomflips.com. Look for the support us or the donate button, and you use it. He's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. Been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA, and he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy. He's fighting for the Reds. He says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die. And he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Labau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war. And without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me, and brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put an end to war. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Welcome to Revolution Radio, where you, the listeners, are in charge. Here at Revolution Radio, we present 48 broadcast hours of news and information each and every day. Revolution Radio never sleeps. Revolution Radio is worldwide and borderless information. Revolution Radio is also commercial free. Revolution Radio is supported 100% by you, the listeners. And that's why we appeal to you to donate and support this station and its expenses. You can support us in many available options like archive subscriptions, our seed pack selections, or even my woodworking store. And we also even have Revolution Radio's swag at the Revolution Radio Zazzle store, in which you can get t-shirts, coffee cups, even a baby onesie. Or you can just plain donate to the cause. We cannot continue without your support, and your support is what helps pay the bills. So please, if you wish us to continue, please stop by our station support page and drop a dime on us. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Is your data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank or all